Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board. Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast. Go hard, go fast.
Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and I am here with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh McIntosh. It has been a long time. How you doing, Tosh?
I'm doing great. The season is here. It's about dang time.
Yeah, it's about dang time. And this episode, we are going to be bringing you our 2015 season preview for the Brigham Young University Cougars. This is CougarCast, and it's on Vegas FO. If this is your first time listening, welcome. Thank you. Tell your friends. If you have listened for a long time, thank you for listening. Hopefully, we can give you something that you know, when you're standing, when you go to the party, right, to watch the first game. They're playing Nebraska. It's on ABC afternoon. We're hoping to arm you so that you can be the annoying guy with points.
Well, you know.
So that is our goal today. And anyway, we hope that you enjoy this. Okay, so listen. The first thing I wanted to talk about, the biggest change from last year to this year comes in personnel within the coaching staff. And not really personnel, I guess. It's just that Nick Howell was demoted. And we wanted to talk a little bit about the changes that are now within the defense for BYU. Defense last year, biggest problem with it was generating pressure.
Yes, there was several problems, but that was, I would say, the biggest is zero pass rush.
Everybody's talking about the secondary and the issues with the secondary, and trust me, there were issues. But the biggest problem, right, is that quarterbacks had time.
It doesn't matter who your secondary is. If the quarterback can just sit there and just wait and wait and wait, he's going to find somebody open. DBs can't guard somebody for 5 seconds.
So it's hard enough to cover a guy and react to their movements. The longer that goes, the harder it gets. And so generating blitz and getting pressure on the quarterback was a problem. Last year, they were tremendous at stopping the run and horrendous at stopping the pass. And so it'll be interesting. And what happened last year, as a quick recap, Nick Howell, he was given the reins, take over the defense. The young man from Ben Lomond High School, he struggled at Ben Lomond, came on as a graduate assistant, moved up the ranks, worked with the linebackers, did some special team coaching, finally started to become sort of an assistant defensive coordinator, but he didn't call the plays. Last year he was able to call the plays, and it took a total of 7 games for Bronco to lose his faith in old Colt. If you don't know, his nickname was Colt for a while because he was a little Bronco. Anyway, so now, here we stand. Season ends. Things got worse, by the way. Bronco took over the play calling. They had their worst game of the year defensively, gave up the most points of the year defensively, and then it was given back to Nick Howell. But they made the decision following the season that Nick Howell would return back to his prior role.
Still the same title, but without him, he's not calling the plays. And he's not as involved in the... So I've heard that Bronco runs every defensive team meeting now. You know, Bronco's more or less back to being the defensive coordinator.
Right. So he's no longer calling plays. It was this demotion. And it occurred because Bronco was dissatisfied with the work that Nick Howell was doing defensively. Along with fans, right? I think there was a lot of fans that were disappointed with, you know, the efforts that were being put in by the defense.
If I ranked what gives fans hope this season, number one would be the return of Taysom Hill, but number two is that we have Bronco running the defense instead of Howell.
So Bronco, like I've said to you in the past, we've talked about this, but Bronco's greatest strength is keeping points off the board. He just finds ways to keep points off the board and grind out a way to get points.
And he gets the most out of his players, I think, is how he does that.
And so he doesn't ever really put out a defense that makes a ton of big plays. They're never really that positive in the turnover margin, right? They're never one of the top turnover-forcing defense. So it's not a big play defense. It's a game management defense that manages to keep points off the board, and ultimately that's what counts. But they're not going to necessarily win games for you because they're going to force a pick six or a fumble and then have it taken back.
I have extreme confidence in Bronco running the deep just because of his past history. One thing that worries me that I haven't heard talked about is what's the chemistry going to be like, though, between Colt, also known as Nick Howell, and Bronco. Are they going to be able to make it work when, yeah, maybe in the offseason they've had some kumbaya moments, but when the pressure's on again and they're looking at each other and somebody does screws up, how well are they going to be able to work together?
There's going to be glares. It's going to happen. At some point this year, there's going to be times where there's some struggles. And you know what? The point is that they're both, like, I don't care like how wonderful of humans these guys are. They both have egos. They're both where they are because they're super competitive. And so I don't know. At some point, I feel like Nick Howell, he's either just walking, tiptoeing around, or he's going to get frustrated. And it's my understanding from last year that part of the reason why things went so poorly against Boise State was because there was, friction and tension between these two people.
Chemistry was screwed up on the team.
And it rubbed off on the field.
Yeah.
And so I just, it's not being talked about. It's not being spoken about. Maybe these guys are far more professional than I am. I just know that I would be very quick to get a little bit toxic.
Here's the analogy I go with here. They were, the guy and the girl are engaged. They're set to get married. And then the guy breaks off the engagement and says, well, but we should still keep dating, and then and then they're going to the family party. It's going to be some awkwardness.
Right.
And I feel like that's my worry going into this season is that they were engaged and now it's just, we're keeping them around. Nope. We'll say nice things. But it's like everyone knows, hey, it didn't work.
That's right. Yeah. And that's it. It's the couple that puts on their Facebook like, we're changing. We're moving the date back.
It's complicated.
We're moving the date back. We were supposed to get married on this day a week before. They're like, we're pushing the date back. Anyway, they never end up getting married. Have you ever seen anybody end up?
I'm sure there's examples. There's probably listeners that, hey, that's me and my wife. But it's not a good thing. I don't think anyone's going to.
Yeah, I don't think any of the listeners that had the rocky road with their wife. I don't think any of them would advocate the rocky road. Anyway, so that's where they are. And I kind of feel like, in a lot of ways, I've made this comparison to you, but the relationship between them, Nick Howell reminds me of, he's sort of like Biff Tannen after Marty goes back to the future, and so that makes, Bronco obviously is George McFly. So I just, I shined it up real nice for you. Now, Biff,
meaning that,
don't con me.
He's got to be on eggshells worried that he can't screw up again. He's got to be on his last life of needing this to work.
Right. So what if he has a great idea or he's got this wonderful input to put in? I don't know how trusted he is at this point. And there's going to be tension there. There's got to be.
Yeah.
There has to be.
If he's been neutered a little bit. And you can't have a guy on staff that feels like he can't speak his opinion.
Or you can't have a guy on staff who's also in self-preservation mode.
Yeah.
That was one of the problems at the end of the run for Gary Croton.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why accountability became a thing, right? That's why Bronco made it such a buzzword at this program. So anyway, I'm nervous about that, okay? And that's something that nobody else is talking about. I think that you and I, we're equally worried about that, or are you not worried about it?
I'm worried about it, but at the same time, I think Bronco is just going to have things I think our defense is going to be a whole step better than last year, and so I think all will be fine on defense. But it's worth noting, and no one's talking about the possibility, which I think some defensive weird chemistry between coaches is a big possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what they say? It's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Johnnies and Joes. So let's talk about some of the players this year. That's the old coaching adage. Taysom Hill, obviously, you said the number one thing fans are most excited about anticipating. Hill is back, 19 starts in his career, and he has, you know, obviously an electric runner, and we know that about him. And I know that this will annoy some listeners, right? But obviously the question is can he win football games with his arm?
And that's been unproven so far. But this
there's been games, right? There's been games where he's been successful throwing.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's like, just like the 1-point win at Houston.
And against UConn in our season opener last year. He looked great throwing the ball. But he's had some terrible games. He's gotten better. But here's – we need him to do well. Us having a dynamic year, it almost – it's really on one man. And it's on Taysom being able to be dynamic. And as you brought up, I have 100% faith in that he's going to be a dynamic runner. It's if teams stack the box, can he make them pay? And that is what is yet to be determined by old Taysom.
Every team that has been successful against BYU has been able to neutralize the run and force BYU to throw, right? I mean, that's been the biggest thing. 39 passes or less when Taysom starts, the Cougars are 11-1. When he throws the ball 40 times or more, the Cougars are 2-4. So it just shows you when teams have forced BYU to play from behind or to throw because the run is taken away or limited, that's a very, very bad scenario with Taysom Hill as the quarterback.
Hopefully this year's different, and why is – I don't think he's going to – I never expect him to all of a sudden be able to have Kurt Warner's arm, you know?
Nice pick.
But I do
out of nowhere. He goes with the grocery bagger anyway.
But he can get better at throwing the ball. And where I think that he might be bailed out this year is last year I said that our receivers were our most overrated group going into the year. I think that this year that might be the group that I have the most confidence in is our receivers. Some of the same guys, sure, but we've added some guys, and the guys that were they were unproven last year. Now these guys have a year of D1 football. I think that he has a much better receiving core to be able to bail him out in these situations where he has to throw the ball this year.
And I think, you know, we've seen the progression, right? Year one was about, and obviously offensive line, as the offensive line improves, you know, the quarterback improves. Like, there's obviously correlation between those, right? But in his first year, obviously the goal was just throw it over 50%. And by the end of the year, he got near and better than 50% in his performances. In year two, right, it became, now we need to push that to the over 60%, and we need you to throw for 200 yards a game. And he was there. This year, we need him to throw for 300 yards a game, stay around 60%, look downfield. Last year, he only completed 8 passes where the ball traveled downfield over 20 yards. He completed like 3 or 4 passes. I think it was 4 passes. Let me look it up. Anyway, 4 passes from the 10 to 20 yard, and then everything else was short. And so, you know, of his, you know, all of his completions, very few of them came outside of those short 10-yard routes. And that's okay, but the other place that he throws, too, is to the outside. And so my question is, can he throw across the middle? Is he going to have faith to throw across the middle? And can he throw those intermediate throws? And we know he can hit some of those longer throws, but it's the intermediate passing game and across the middle of the field. And that's the biggest hole in Taysom Hill's throwing game.
Yeah, and to be determined. But that's what we all got to be watching in this crazy September we're going to have. is can Taysom hit some of the throws that he wasn't able to hit in years past?
And that's the thing. His midfield throws, he was under like 30% last year, that 10 to 20 yard range. I mean, it was bad.
Not good.
It was bad. But his short throws were fantastic. Now, throwing to the running backs is important. And that's one of the actually kind of the hidden maybe benefits, if there are any, from from Jamal Williams being out. Obviously, he's out for the season.
You were alluding to the Algie's our best receiving running back.
Yeah, and Jamal's not really a guy we look to when we throw the football.
He's probably below average receiver.
Yeah. So I think with him, and you have Hine, and maybe some of the other guys that they're looking at back there, Francis Bernard and some of these other guys, maybe we can find more, you know, kind of that outlet throw that was so successful when they would do it to Manasseh Tonga, was so successful, obviously, with Harvey Unga. And so those short passes to the running backs, that's you know, it's when you play football on video games, that's always the one that you can nail. I mean, if you throw those passes to running backs, they're always open. And the same actually is true in real life. I mean, it's the nice emergency valve. It can save Taysom from extra hits. And I think that that'll be really important for this offense to develop. They got to be throwing more to those running backs. And as they do that, they'll be more successful.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point of Taysom avoiding hits, because that's the other thing this year that's vital is Taysom's health.
So question one, are we sure he's 100% before the year? I mean, we've seen him in practice. You and I went to practice together. He looks good. He looks healthy and strong.
But they're not letting him really go full tilt yet. I mean, he hasn't taken a single hit, which is smart. But he also hasn't ran where you can tell he runs fast. But what divides Taysom is he's running fast. And then he has like an extra gear to get around that corner, to get around that outside linebacker, or to burst away from the safety, which we haven't seen that yet. And he suffered a pretty serious injury last year. And so until we see it, we won't be 100% sure. But you asking me, do I think he's healthy? I'm voting yes.
And he looked really healthy. He had looked healthy as a buck after his last injury came in. He played great.
He's proven he can come back from injuries. He's not limping at all. There's no signs that he's not. And yeah, it was a bad injury, but it was also a long time ago. I feel like he's had, what, 8, 9 months to recover? Like, a guy that is so into his physique and health is bound to be, I think, healthy at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about identity. I mean, we talked about the importance of passing, but ultimately, if BYU can be a dominant run team the way they have been, and continue to build on those things that they were able to accomplish with the running game underneath Taysom Hill, that's obviously their most strongly suited opportunity to attack other teams. Maybe the biggest tragedy of, you know, identity is that the Cougars had to kind of switch it up to adjust to Christian Stewart. We didn't get more time to build upon the identity that a team has to take underneath a dynamic running threat like Taysom Hill. And so, you know, the receivers had to do different things when they're with Taysom rather than when they're with, you know, Stewart. Same thing goes for the offensive line. And so because of that, we just lost more opportunity to kind of gel and get that really strong identity under Taysom Hill. And that might be the thing that stinks the most. Had we had more, I'd feel a lot more comfortable as we take on this very difficult first four games of the season. And I just think that that's one of the things that will be I'll be interested to see if they can pick up and find that identity and really do what they do well quickly.
And so where I'm 100% at is that Taysom needs to have his same identity that he's had in years past. That our identity needs to be, yes, he needs to be an improved passer, but that I still want that guy taken off running. And I know some fans disagree, but I want him running over people. I mean, that's Taysom.
Well, and people, again, it's the same thing. Taysom Hill's game is different than other quarterbacks we're used to. It's like when, for whatever reason, the you know, in your ward, the lady who's conducting decides to choose a hymn that nobody knows. I don't know. Why do they do that?
They're trying to teach us.
It's still a hymn. you're just not used to it. And I kind of feel that way with Taysom. It's like he's still a quarterback. You're just not used to that style here. This is obviously our third year with him. And I just think that it'll be, you know, it's gelling more. I think the fans are more ready for it. But we still love passing. I've heard a lot of people say, I had more fun watching Christian Stewart sling that thing around, you know, than I did during watching Taysom Hill. And it's just different, man. I just, unfortunately for him, I just think that that's how fans feel, and it'll be interesting, again, just to see him go. So, and I'm with you. He's got to do what he does, because if he doesn't do the things that he does, which is run and, you know, be physical on the field the way he is, you lose a lot of what makes him a valuable football player.
Which that brings up another point, is that our second string quarterback this year is wide open. And really, it's going to most likely be a freshman. You know, and so right now, I think everyone thinks that Tanner Mangum is the front runner, and he probably is. I mean, if I'm betting money, he's the second string quarterback.
Outstanding arm talent.
Yeah, the best we've had, the best arm we've had since
Jake Heaps.
And
by the way, don't get that wrong, everybody. Jake Heaps is a tremendous arm talent. He's just not a tremendous quarterback.
Yeah, amen. And so here's my only worry. I want the best quarterback to be second string. Well, not the second best quarterback to be second string. But my worry is an identity standpoint of that if Taysom goes down, Tanner Mangum is a totally different style identity quarterback. That's a concern that I have. We saw last year it took us several games to adjust.
Four games.
We have one guy. Bo Hodge is a guy competing for that second string job that does have a pretty much a similar identity to Taysom's, where okay arm, and Bo's arm could get better. He's only a true freshman. But that guy's already a good kind of bruiser runner. I know that this is crazy talk, but I'm throwing it out there that if there was a situation where Taysom went down only for a game or two, I think it's worth considering, would it maybe be worth it to have Bo Hodge be the Band-Aid that comes in and does his best Taysom impression for a half or for a game or two, so that we don't have to change the offense and it's not as big of a learning curve for everybody as it was last year. If it's a long period, you put the best arm in there, which from all accounts looks like Tanner Mangum.
Or the best player, right? I think Mangum's probably in front in terms of running a team and all of that.
Oh, he's looked dynamic at the scrimmages and yeah.
But the thing is it'll be, yeah, it's an interesting thought you're having, and you know, maybe you just put in the best. I don't know. It's hard to explain that to Tanner Mangum though, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
It's like, we actually have you slotted in front, but because it's only going to be one game, that's a hard one. That's a tricky one to navigate.
Because you can tell him, hey, you're ahead of him for next year, yada, yada. But then if Hodge goes out there and lights
plays
it up,
great. Yeah, then it's... Oh, boy. So, yeah, it's a crazy thought, and I understand where it's coming from. And I actually think that it's not a bad thought. And I hope we don't even have to find out.
Agreed. Taysom's proven before that he has gone through a whole season being the bruiser, take 30 hits a game guy. So would I bet my life on it? No, but it gives me some hope that he could go through the season totally healthy because he's done it before.
How many times this season are we going to see two quarterbacks on the field for a play?
At the same time?
Yes.
None.
There is a pitcher out there of two guys in their yellow jerseys.
Really?
With Mangum handing it off.
Huh? Well?
To Taysom. Just a thought. I don't know. It's out there. It's okay. A thought. I don't know. A lot of people are talking about it. Do you think we'll actually ever see it?
No.
Broncos pretty adverse to trick plays.
And with we're trying to avoid Taysom getting hits, handing the ball off to him as a running back is not the way to have him avoid.
But here's the thing, though. Again, you can't avoid him getting hits. He's got to play that way. I mean, we just talked about it. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Okay, last thing, I guess, so we've done offense, a defense. Obviously, punting, brand new punter, replacing Arlano. He was great. I actually think there's a competition for the punting spot.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people think it's Linehan, clearly.
Because he's famous.
But I think Almond is a nice punter. It's a question of distance versus, you know...
Versatility. Hard to catch balls, I've been hearing from Linehan, that he kicks like a... on purpose wobbly ball that's hard to...
Right, and he kicks it a little further than Rhett Almond. And the other problem, the other thing that Linehan gives you is that, you know, trick plays, like we said. If something goes wrong, I mean, he can run, he can do some of these things. Or the other one is he can tackle a guy. So if somebody gets loose and makes a return. But special teams were actually a really bad spot for BYU last year. Other than Arlano kicking and pinning people back, which he did actually pretty frequently, anytime, I guess, returns. BYU was poor at covering returns. They were in the 90s last year in national rank in punt return coverage. They were in the 100s last year in kickoff return coverage. And so they were very poor at kick coverage last year. And that's something that's got to get better. And that's why I would think a little bit about Rhett Almond, the other punter, because he's going to boot it around 40 to 50 yards, but it goes nice and high, and it's going to be a fair catch. He doesn't outkick the coverage. I haven't at least seen him do it. And so I actually think it depends on what you value. You know, you don't know where the football is going to go. It may go 65 yards off of Linehan's foot, right? But it may also go 35, right? He's not very consistent. Anyway, it's just a thought. Trevor Sampson, really bright spot at the last open scrimmage that fans could go to. He hit every single kick, including 50 yarders.
He's been kicking lights out this fall. He's done great.
So it's been a long time since BYU's had a weapon for a kicker, and hopefully this means that, you know, we can take 40 yarders and still get 3 points on the board. It's been a long, long. I don't think we've had a kicker under Bronco Mendenhall. Like 2004 with Payne.
Yeah.
It was like the last time that they had a kicker that you would feel okay with a 40-yard kick. Had we had a kicker, we would have forced overtime against you. Oh, no, I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, there's a million of those situations. Yeah, if we had a kicker.
So, anyway, so it's interesting. So all three phases, you got to talk about it. It's often overlooked, but I actually feel okay with BYU's special teams if their punt coverage can be better and their kickoff coverage can be better. Last thing I want to talk about, suspensions. We know Sione Takitaki's out for game one. The outside linebacker will not be playing against the University of Nebraska. What are we hearing about suspensions?
So, A, there's going to be suspensions. B, that I think there's been some rumors of this, but we've heard it from several key sources.
I've gotten it from two or three places, and so have you, right?
Yes, that there are suspensions that are going to be laid down that are non-fight related, and specifically players having, and I don't know specifics, but players that are, what I do know is the night before the bowl game, players were having a little bit too much fun in Miami, and they did something that has got them into trouble, where they're going to be, there will be some suspensions due to that.
And so, and I've heard the same thing, and so I do think that what's going to happen is you're going to see that there will be players who do not play against Nebraska, and people are going to go back and try to search the fight video. And see.
They're like, wait, that guy barely did anything.
He wasn't even in it. I can't find him in there. Why is he suspended, right? And so that might be part of it. It may also be something else, right?
Yeah.
And so we're aware, and it's defensive. The names we're hearing are defensive, but we're not gonna report it at this point because we don't know the specifics in terms of how long the suspension is, if it's a for a quarter or whatever. But you should expect that there'll be guys that are suspended, and you're going to go back and look at the fight video and go, wait a second, he wasn't in the fight.
That's what I hate about having a tough team first game, especially at BYU. Like, we need to start scheduling Patsy's first game, because every single year, for a variety of different reasons, we always have suspensions for the first game.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's just, that is just life as a BYU fan. And anyway, one of the things that we do on this show is we ask 10 questions for Tosh McIntosh. And these questions, they aren't for his opinion. They're for fact. So let's do 10 for Tosh. All right, Tosh, question number one. Which player from last year will the BYU Cougars miss the most?
I'm going to go defensively here, Craig Bills.
Whoa. Everyone has been blasting that secondary.
Yes, because, well, he missed some games, but he, that's what has me scared about this secondary. He was our, he was making it as good as it was. And I just think this year we're gonna see, man, that guy was a freak. He was a freak as a junior. And out of all the players we lost, that's the one that scares me the most.
Sky Pove? Don't we feel good though about Takanaka and Nakua?
I feel okay about Nakua. The Takanaka is totally unproven. I think he's just living off of hype right now.
All right, so the safety, Craig Bills, that's who we missed most from last year.
Yep.
Question number two, how many games will Taysom start this year?
So including the bowl game, so we're talking 13 possibilities. Taysom will start 11 games.
You would have to think that's a tremendous success for him. Lots of injuries have plagued his career, obviously. So 11 starts would be really good. Which game will he miss? Utah State?
That's the hard one. If I had to say, I'm guessing, here's the scenario. You're going to pin me down.
Wagner. Is he going to sit back out for Wagner?
He gets beat up. He gets beat up in the Missouri game. But it's not incredibly serious, but he's not able to finish the last two games, Fresno State and Utah State, but he's healthy again for the bowl game.
Question number three, what is the highest we are ranked this season?
Here we go.
This is going to be fact.
We're going to be ranked number 15 in the nation.
Holy smokes.
Here's how it happens. I'm getting specific here. We beat Nebraska, and we crack that. We're 25th. Then the next week, Boise State's coming off of their victory against Washington. They're extremely highly ranked. We knock them off. All of a sudden, we're 15th in the nation. And then sadly, our hearts are broken the next week at UCLA. 15. That's the highest we're ranked this year, is number 15.
I love your optimism. I think they're going to be unranked. I don't know if they'll get ranked this year. If they win early on, yes, but I don't know. All right. How about how many different players will be suspended for a game or more this season? So we already touched on this, but how many?
So I'm extremely confident that there's going to be at least four that are suspended for the first game. And that number could be higher. So I'm going to go for the season, seven. Seven different players will be suspended this year for a game or more.
Oh, my gosh. All right, next one. How many guys will get drafted after this year? We all know the number, right? Two guys have been drafted underneath Bronco Mendenhall, two of his recruits, rather. And so
this is the year that streak ends, and we have, it's not like it's a bonanza, but I'm going to go with three.
Who are you feeling?
Here's where I'm whistling out.
Taysom,
Mitch? I can only think of two. Yeah, Taysom and Mitch, and then someone else emerges. Adam Hines, the wild card there. There's a few guys that could.
Bronson,
for sure. I'm not as high on Bronson as I am, but he three players. Bronson's got a decent chance of getting drafted though. So let's go. Three players are drafted after this year.
Question number seven. Would this year's team, the 2015 roster, would it be able to beat last year's team, the 2014 roster?
And we're going just healthy players versus healthy players. So this year, no Jamal. I'm still going yes. This year's team is better. We have more depth at the line, at the receiving core. I think our linebackers, our best guys last year were the young guns, and they're a year older. This year's team would beat last year's team.
Question number eight. Will any single season record be broken this year by this team. Now, I think you're this question is piggybacking off of Broncos' hype quote from spring, right? Which was that BYU would have the most prolific offense in history, and when pushed about it, they said, in BYU history, he said, no, NCAA history.
So as optimistic as I am, the answer is no. I've thought about this a while. I can't think of any player that's going to be able to break even a BYU single season record this year. I just don't. Hopefully I'm proven wrong, but I don't see it happening.
The best, I was going to say.
You could kind of make up a record and say most rushing yards by a quarterback, but I don't think Taysom's going to break his.
Sophomore year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think maybe the one that's most in reach. Oh, no, I was going to say maybe receiving in a year, but no one's catching Colley.
It'd be a crazy one, maybe like interceptions. I don't think our interceptions in a year record's that high, but I don't know which player would do it. But so the answer is no. No records are going down this year, sadly.
Question number 9, will any BYU player be booed by the home fans this year?
We've had a tendency to do that in the past.
So my favorite home game booing of last year. Maybe the coldest game I've ever gone to in my life. It was the blackout versus UNLV. So cold. I don't know if you remember how cold that was, but it was ridiculous. And fourth quarter, game's in hand, Cougars up by double digits. Broncos calling timeout with like 90 seconds left, and the fans are booing. The fans were booing the coach for calling timeout when the game was in hand, and we were all freezing.
And that's a good foreshadowing of my answer. There will be no booing of players this year, but there will be booing of coaches. I think that if this season doesn't go great, I can feel some animosity building toward the staff. And if Bronco calls a weird timeout, like tries to ice a PAT, or if he takes the foot off the pedal in a game where we're leading, I feel, or if they have Nick Howell go out to present something, like there will be booing from the crowd towards a coach this year.
What about, here's a scenario, halftime, Boise State 14, BYU 3.
No, I don't think we're booing yet. It depends. Do we win at Nebraska? If we lost at Nebraska...
Let's say lost at Nebraska because the season opening road victory is one of the rarest gems in BYU football.
If we lose at Nebraska and we're losing 14-3, there's no booing. 21-3, then there's going to be booing at halftime.
What if it's 14-0?
No, I still don't think that's enough. All right. Fans feel like that's in reach.
18 points, huh? It's three scores then.
Yeah.
That's your problem. Okay, three scores. And question number 10. Will BYU play the University of Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl?
Yes. I'm on record now. I would love it. We're going to end up in the Las Vegas Bowl. I know on the schedule it says or Hawaii.
Man.
I love Hawaii. Give me an excuse to try.
I thought you were
going to
go New Year's 6.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. But we're going to be in the Las Vegas Bowl, and I do think that it's against Utah. Mark it down. Plan your trip.
That would be awesome. And if BYU loses that game, I don't know if my heart can take it.
It'd be awesome and terrifying from an emotional standpoint.
All right, so there it is. It is 10 questions for Tosh McIntosh. Well done, sir. Okay, so one of the things that we wanted to talk about quickly, Tosh, you were interested in doing, okay, who's leading the team in different of Taysom Hill?
Well, so you think Taysom?
I think Taysom Hill, yes.
I also will go Taysom. So, yeah, outside of him, who's your who's number two leading rusher?
Well, I think Algie is another kind of guy that gets hurt.
Yeah.
Adam Hine is another kind of guy that gets hurt.
Algie doesn't break off huge runs. That guy's a pound it guy.
Right.
But he's had some decent games. But here I'm going with Adam Hine is going to have the most rushing yards from a running back. people are writing him off. Like, oh, he didn't hit the holes very hard last year. He was hurt. Like, the only game he was healthy was Texas, which he looked pretty dang good in. And then he was gimpy for pretty much the whole rest of the year. A healthy Hine is going to wow people.
I'm still waiting for them to throw a screen pass to Adam Hine. I don't think it's ever happened.
There's not a more no-brainer coaching move than a screen pass to our fastest guy.
It's like, give that guy a little space, throw him a screen pass, let him go to work.
And so instead, they throw it to our tallest guy.
Who's not as, I mean, he's fast, but he's not.
He's like four screen passes thrown to him a game.
Right.
Let's throw one to Hine.
I would be elated.
Okay, that's a good segue. So, who leads in receiving?
Receiving yards this year, it's hard not to say Mitch Matthews. He is a big play, not a big play, he's a big game receiver. He can have giant, giant totals when he plays. And so because of that, I would go with him.
I'm going Nick Kurtz. I think I've bought into the Nick Kurtz bandwagon. He's been, I think, the best receiver of fall camp. Sure, Mitch has been hurt. But I think that's going to play into the season. The guy just had hernia surgery. I hope Mitch is good. But I think that Nick Kurtz is going to be the guy catches everything thrown his way, and he's pretty dang athletic. I bet he leads in receiving.
He catches almost everything thrown his way?
That's my impression. The guy has a great catching
range. So you missed the first throw of the last open
scrimmage. Yeah, he did have a big drop.
He dropped it.
Yeah, like a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
He catches almost everything thrown his way.
I don't think he's earned that right yet. But yeah, he is obviously a tremendous athlete, very tall, and again, could be very successful on the outside.
Do you have any idea who leads in tackles? That's the hardest one for me is on defense. We have no, like,
Manoa obvious. Pakula.
All right. I'm going to go Harvey Lange, even though I think he's might miss a game or two. I'm going to go Harvey Lange leads the team in
tackles. Sacks?
I'm going to go Fred Warner. Who are you going?
I will also... You know what? I'll say Bronson Kafusi.
See, I think Bronson's a great pass rusher. It's so hard from the DN spot. I put him
why do
my
we
third.
Feel? Why do we feel
Taki
so confident?
Taki, I think, is my second, and then.
Well, but wait a second. Why do we feel so confident in Fred Warner? He got a lot of downs last year. He wasn't that disruptive.
He was a true freshman, and
yeah, but the great one, like when Vannoy would come in as a freshman, like it was like, oh. Right? I mean, yeah. So are we sure he's a great one? Like, everybody kind of has anointed him as a great one. And all I'm trying to get at is I think he's very good. He's clearly an athlete. He was highly rated. And all of those things, you know, lead you to believe that he could be a great one. But I think he's very good. And I think he's just good at this point. I haven't seen a ton from Fred Warner that would make me... what was his jaw-dropping moment?
Did he block a punt or something like that? So here's my thing on Fred Warner. I'm going all off of athleticism, and then recently it was announced and it kind of released that he suffered a major injury last year during the UNLV game where, you know, a pretty serious back injury. And that he played through that, where this year he's feeling 100%. I think we see a new Fred Warner.
How could he not with Frank Wintrich?
And I'm putting Bronco controlling the D again. When Bronco runs the D, our outside linebackers are dynamic.
Yeah. Also, when we have a defensive lineman back on the defensive line, that might help too. I'm referring to Bronson Kafusi.
Yes. I think Bronson's great. I just think that his job, I think him being great is going to get our outside linebackers more sacks.
All right.
Interceptions. This is the hardest of all of them. Who is going to lead our team in interceptions?
Well, all right. So your mind naturally wants to go to, like, Jordan Prater. But usually the interceptions leader comes from the safety, right? I mean, it's a lot easier to get a safety.
That's BYU.
Yeah. Or maybe even a linebacker.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Why not? I'll go for it. I'll go with... I'll try Jordan Prater.
Nice. I am going Michael Davis.
We're both taking corners.
Yeah. The corners, I think, this year are going to be better than we expect. And Michael Davis, he's talking the talk. He's saying that he's tired of people thinking he has the potential to be a great corner, that this year he's going to be a great corner. And the guy plans on...
Wasn't he the guy, though, that was popping off about how the team was going to go undefeated last year?
I don't remember that. Maybe. The guy is not afraid to say an opinion, even though he's a pretty shy guy. But he wants to play in the NFL, and he knows it's put up or shut up time in order for that to happen. I think we see a big year from old Michael Davis.
All right. Well, listen, I think obviously the team this year is facing – everyone's been – I mean, maybe the biggest story of the offseason outside of maybe suspensions has been schedule. And the greatest trivia question to ask a BYU fan right now is, what's the fifth game on the schedule? Nobody knows the answer. Everyone knows and has it memorized by heart the first four games, and nobody knows the next four and then the last four. So, but you know what? After those first four games, it's not all that easy of a schedule. It's still a very difficult schedule. A couple things before we get in to a full schedule conversation. This is using from Sports Reference. They have a metric which measures a team's record based upon the schedule that they played and ranks that out. BYU, over the last 3 years, has scheduled out and has played to be the 33rd best team according to that metric. Okay, the SRS metric. You know, that's pretty good. 33rd best team. This year, we will play six teams that are top 40 teams. And Fresno State, this is over the last 3 years. So based on their SRS average over the last 3 years. So six of the 12 teams on the schedule are absolutely considered top 40 teams. And one of those teams, Fresno State, is actually 47th. So anyway, Cincinnati's 50th. So there's a lot of really good teams on the schedule. Things to think about over the last two seasons with Taysom Hill as the starting quarterback against top 20 teams, BYU is 1-2, and they have averaged 13 points on the scoreboard in those games. BYU this season will be playing they have two teams that are top 20 teams.
Who?
UCLA and Missouri.
And then what's Taysom's record against top 40?
Top 40, he's 4-4. So that means teams 21 through 40 over the last, when Taysom has started, the Cougars have been 3-2 against that. And that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, they're playing against teams that are about the same level as they are. They've been 3-2 in those games. Against the topper level teams, they've lost two, and they won the one, and it was against?
Utah State.
Back when he was a young buck, they scored 6 points against Utah State, and that defense was able to hold.
And that Utah State team was pretty dang good.
They were very good, and so they were considered the 19th best team in 2012. Anyway, so this year, in terms of the difficulty, here's the ranking according to this metric: the 3-year average of SRS. So it's UCLA, Missouri, Nebraska, Utah State, Boise State, Michigan, Fresno, Cincinnati, East Carolina, San Jose State, UConn, and then Wagner. So sounds like a pretty difficult schedule, and obviously the tough ones are on the road, and the easier ones are at home. But let's go through the schedule real quick, and I will give you the ranking of these teams. So Nebraska, they open the season on the road in Lincoln, Nebraska. Nebraska has been the 31st best team over the last 3 years. BYU, the 33rd best team. So this is a split game, and then, of course, on the road, that tilts a little towards Lincoln. Towards the boys in Lincoln, I guess.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through wins and losses. What do you want to do?
I'm going on this one. BYU wins at Nebraska. And here, I like to give percentages because win-loss, that doesn't tell the story. I give us a 52% chance of winning this game.
So, like I said, winning on the road in true road games doesn't really happen very often for BYU. Taysom did it last year against UConn. Of course, going to Nebraska is a whole different thing. We like Bronco against new coaches and new scenarios, and that is going to be the case for the Cornhuskers. And because of that, the Cornhuskers are going to have more of a, you know, have to adopt a new identity. BYU may not have to deal with that. So it is. This is a very, very close game.
Yeah.
Close games have been were Broncos friends during the first 5 years, and then over the last 5 years, it's been harder to win the close games. It's like his luck ran out or something. I don't know. I'm going to take a loss there.
All right. We'll talk more Nebraska next week, so we won't spend too much time here because you guys will get a lot of Nebraska next show.
That's right. Boise State is the second game. It is at home. Boise State has been the 38th best team over the last 3 years. So 38th versus 33rd. Cougars at home.
The team that kicked our butts last year.
They absolutely murdered us last year. We absolutely murdered them 2 years ago.
I am going a win. And percentage, I give it a 51%. So slightly less than my Nebraska, but a 51% chance of victory. And my reasons are, A, I think there'll be a revenge factor from our team. I feel like, you know, the home team's had an advantage the last few years in this game. That, yes, that Boise's returning a lot, but they're lost their quarterback and their NFL running back. And so I think we beat the Blue Smurfs at home.
This one's really hard for me. Being at home, I like the Cougars at home. I have thought about this for how long, and I still can't figure it out. I guess if I were to pick right now, I'm gonna take a win there.
And here, I think if we lose at Nebraska, that it increases our odds of winning against Boise State. I actually think I don't think we're going to lose the first two in a row. But anyway, let's go UCLA now. The toughest game on the schedule in most people's minds.
Freshman quarterback, true freshman.
Yes, which there's a chink in that armor, right? So I am going to go at UCLA. I have a loss. I have us only a 33% chance of winning that game.
Yeah, it's pretty higher than I would have the percentages. They're going to lose this game.
Here's what gives me hope. We both have them as a loss. Here's the hope on it. The Dirty Utes beat UCLA last year. If they can do it, we can do it. We have owned
UCLA. Was it in the Rose Bowl?
I don't think so. I'm not sure on that, though.
Okay.
We have beat up on UCLA when they were expected to beat us in the past.
We've also been beat up by UCLA.
Yeah. And so they have a freshman. They have a true freshman quarterback.
Rosen.
Who was highly recruited. But we've seen at BYU what can happen when you put a dang good high school quarterback, throw him to the wolves with a Bronco defense that's going to be putting pressure on him. Those are what give us some hope. Again, I had this as a loss, there's some hope there.
Okay, then we're going to Ann Arbor to play the Michigan Wolverines. Jim Harbaugh taking over the Michigan program. How do you feel about that one?
I wish that it was one of the earlier games.
So this is
the fourth game.
This is the 40th best team. Over the last 3 years.
This is a 50-50 game for me. Percentage-wise. So I don't know which
you
one.
You really pick. Don't. I mean, listen, the road, right? It's pretty well, like, we're not a great road team. We haven't been a good road team in a while.
Here's the secret weapon. I have never traveled on the road and seen BYU lose. And so I just got to keep going to a lot of these games.
How many road games have you gone to, though?
probably three.
I'm just trying to.
So here we go.
You're going to this one.
I plan on trying to go. I'm going to go to two out of the four. That one's a maybe, but so yeah, I'm going to go. Let's go loss here. I'll go loss, but I think it's a 50-50 coin toss game.
I think you got a guy that iced the PATs on one side. The other guy is taking teams to the Super Bowl. Was amazing with Stanford. I think the edge in talent for Michigan is there. The edge in coaching is going to be there for Michigan. I know that it's a new system, but by the fourth game, both teams should know what they're doing at that point. By the way, all these predictions are being done with the understanding that Taysom Hill's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, if he gets hurt, that changes a lot. I'm still taking a loss though. I think Michigan's probably going to get the Cougars, in the big house. Cougars come back home for four straight road games. They would play UConn, the 105th best team, but handsome Bob Diaco is going to make his way into Provo.
Nice. This is a win.
It's
not even close. I'm giving this a 90% chance of a win.
I agree with you. East Carolina, the 63rd best team over the last 3 years. The Pirates coming to Provo, Utah, can sometimes be a feisty team. Sometimes. They can bite people.
What's their ranking thing according to?
63. So yeah. They've been 63rd over the last 3 years.
I mean, it's not uncommon for East Carolina to be ranked. You know, they're a team that gets there. I am going win, though. I mean, I think I give it a 75% chance of victory.
Home game. And where are they from? Do you have that pulled up?
No.
Where's East Carolina located?
I mean, it's always confusing when they have a name that sounds like it should be a state, but it's not.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. East Carolina. Okay, yeah, I'll take that as a win as well. All right, so then they got the Cincinnati Bearcats, and we all know what this matchup's really about. It's about the dance teams. The two schools with national championship dance teams.
They need to have a dance off at halftime.
If there's not a dance off at halftime, it's a tragedy. The UC dance team versus the Cougarettes, it's got to happen. is it weird that I maybe would be more interested in seeing those two dance off?
That is weird.
Than yes. Watch the football game. All right, so the Bearcats, 50th best team. They have been the 50th best team in the last 3 years.
They lost their starting quarterback for the year that Phil Steele was crazy high on. I was worried about this game because I think we're going to lose one against a gimme. But I am going to go with a win with a 70% probability.
I'll take a win as well. All right, so the Cincinnati Bearcats. All right, then we welcome
Seahawks.
The Seahawks, that's right, from Wagner College, from Staten Island, New York, coming all the way to Provo, Division II game. At least it's not on Senior Day, but it's the fourth game in a row at home for the Cougars. 100% chance on this one.
99.9, yeah, that's right there. And what I like about the schedule is we have that. If our guys are banged up, we have that game and then a bye to really help us down those last four games of the season. Because the last four games, everyone talks about the first four. The last four, they're not gimmies.
How many divorces are going to be caused by four home games every weekend in October?
I bet there's at least one.
All right. Why am I laughing? That's horrible. All right. Friday night game at San Jose State. Last time the Cougars went to San Jose, they lost to the Spartans.
I am going win here, though. We can't be losing to San Jose two times in a row when we played them. I give it. They have a decent team some years, though. I'm going to go 65%
chance. 65%
chance
to win on the road there. I'll take a win as well. I think they're going to win there. Okay, at Missouri, it's actually neutral site. They're playing
it's
in Kansas
in
City.
State, yeah.
Kansas City. They're playing the Missouri Tigers, Arrowhead Stadium. The SEC team, they've done very well out in the SEC.
This is another game that
the two schools that have been spurned by Trent Hosek.
I am going with a win. I think that the schedule lines up nicely for us to be somewhat pretty fresh for this game. And I think we go out there and we beat an SEC team. And it also how the schedule, we kind of go a while without playing big names. And then we have this big name school at the end. I think our players are going to be jacked for it. I say win, and I give it a 53% chance.
I'll take a loss there. I just think Missouri, obviously very good, excellent team. They're going to have the ability to force the pass. And I'm sorry, I don't know. I mean, Taysom, we know, right? I mean, we've talked about this. But one read run, Taysom, will emerge when teams are really quick. And I just think that, you know, against UConn, he wasn't one read run. But against tougher teams, he turns into a one-read run quarterback. And that's what's going to happen to him against Missouri.
Here's the thing that's in our favor. This is going to be a trap game for Missouri because they're going to have been playing big-name SEC team after big-name SEC team getting beat up. And then they had this game against BYU, which they don't care as much about at this point in the season because of, you know, them going for a conference title. And I think it works for our favor. We sneak a victory. And by sneak, I mean we earn it.
Capture him in the trap. I'm taking a loss. All right. And then Fresno State.
Fresno's a wild card. You know, sometimes they have some... Occasionally they'll have a dynamic quarterback and be, like, pretty dang good. We're going win. I'm going to win here, though, and it's 60%.
They have that green V on their helmets. I don't know if you've ever noticed.
No, I have not.
They've always had a green V on their helmet. It looks weird.
For victory?
I have no idea what it is. I just know that they have it.
I'm sure by the time that week comes, we'll know.
We'll have it scouted out.
We'll announce it.
Have it scouted out. I love bulldogs. I think they're wonderful animals. I'm going to take Fresno State in this game.
Okay. How many losses is that so far for you?
Five.
All right. Already?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go on to the next game and see if we add another one for you. So at Utah State, a team that outplayed us last year, a team that has taken out our star quarterback two out of the last 3 years, a team that's fans we used to love that have become more annoying than ever, we go up to their house. And
Maverick Stadium.
What's your prediction? I'll go have you go first.
It's a tough one, right? This is awesome. It's the end of the year, last game, big game. Both teams will be who they are, right? I mean, both teams will be running at full tilt. And I think that's a really good thing for BYU. BYU is slow out of the gates. Usually they get better as the year goes on. If they just lost to Fresno, I guess they would come out with steam coming out their noses like an Aggie. The depiction of an Aggie. I think they're going to win.
I like your optimism. Here, I'm taking the other side. I'm going to try to take out like a fake answer here. I think that we are going to lose
somewhat,
either at Utah State or in the bowl game. We're going to win one of those and lose one of those, and I'm not sure which one. But I think that we end at 10-3. And so I hate to be this guy, but I give against the stinking Aggies us a 50% chance of winning that game. And then I also give us a 50% chance in the bowl game to have us finish the year at 10-3. What's your bowl game prediction to finish out your...
So, I have them at 7-5.
Well, with bowl game, there's got to be one more game there.
No, I know.
So far, you mean. I'm with you.
Do we go 8-5 for the fourth year in a row? Uh, you,
You got everybody on the edge of
the seat. I'm sorry. I don't mean to make everyone wait. I guess it's not life or death, so I'll just say no, they're not going to win the bowl game. So I'll take them at 7-6 this year.
Whew. All right.
You and I are worlds apart on this.
We are. I went 10-3, and I almost wanted to go 11-2.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane, Tosh.
This is... I think this year has a possibility to be one that we...
Look.
Like the 96 team, or the 2001 team, or a team that we talk to our kids, oh, you should have seen it, man. This Taysom guy was just beating teams that he shouldn't have beat. And I think that...
How many times?
Not every time. I have us going 10-3 or 11-2.
So I know that I picked losses here. I agree with you. He's going to snipe one of these teams. He's going to get Nebraska, UCLA, Michigan, or Missouri. Cougars are going to win one of those.
We'll win more. I bet we win more than one. That's the
They're difference. All on the road, Tosh.
If this is going to be...
They're all on the road.
It's scary.
1-3 in those four games is a tremendous result for the BYU Cougars.
No, 1-3 is not tremendous. You could say it's reasonable, okay. But it's not tremendous.
They're going to snipe one of those games. They're going to get one of those, right? But somewhere between East Carolina, Cincinnati, Fresno State, San Jose State, and Utah State. I don't even want to include Utah State because they're a class above the teams I just read. One of those, let's go those four. East Carolina, Cincinnati, San Jose State, and Fresno State. One of those teams is going to get the Cougars.
I don't disagree with that. I could see us going, I could really see us going 3-1 against the big four teams on the road. And then us dropping one to one of those patsies at home. Here's where my crazy
talk. This is amazing to last me. I just year, don't see it at all.
Last
I don't.
Year, what was our record against Power 5 schools? Undefeated. We beat every single one. Who kicked our butts? The crappy schools. Like, I could see something like that happening again this year. Where we play up, Taysom... is Taysom, we beat the teams that no one thinks we will, and then somehow we lay an egg against a crappy Nevada team, even though we don't play them this year. That was a last year reference.
According to SRS, the strength of schedule with win and losses, all the Power 5 teams last year were 55th or worse.
Yeah, because we beat them, and it just demoralized them.
Cal. They were just so demoralized. Anyway, I'm trying to be honest with it, and I just feel like they're going to struggle, man. I just feel like there's issues. I don't think that we can say that the defense is good. I really don't. I don't think that you can get out there and say this is a 10-win or an 11-win team with what we know about the defense at this point, unless there are tremendous surprises. But who's the new addition to the defense that suddenly turns the table? That's a lot of faith in Harvey Longy.
Yeah, or the Scott Huntsman, who's a true freshman that people are hyped about. Like,
and he may be good, right?
Here's what I will say. This is the toughest schedule that I can remember in my BYU fandom. That I remember being a BYU fan, you know, like the 2001, I believe it was, and seeing we were playing Mississippi State. And being, like, stoked about that. Like, this is the game BYU's going to prove themselves.
Sure.
And then Mississippi State turned out to not even be good that year. And
we barely won.
And
we were really good.
This year we have, like, five of those games.
Because winning on the road's really hard, Tosh. They're not going to go 3-1. They're not going to go 3. I will. Let's bet something giant here.
So
I'll do 1-3. You do 3-1.
I am not doing that bet. I predicted them to. My real predictions was 2-2, but I was tempted to go 3-0 in those games.
All right. Well, I just think that the I think that the schedule obviously very difficult. I think outside of the first four, you know. And by the way, the demoralizing thing, right? I mean, you said the word, right? But if they get out of those first four games winless, it's possible. I don't mean to be like horrible, but yeah. Like it's a possibility. BYU teams generally have resolve, but that's going to be a mountain.
Yeah, with no conference thing and we start 0-4, it's different than past. It's different when Ty went 0-3 his senior year to start the season and then won every game after that.
Right.
Or tied some, I think. But it's different than that. This one, if we go 0-4, we got hardly anything to play for. What I will say, here's a question to throw back at you. What if we go 4-0 in those first four games? Will Provo and BYU fans, I think it will be a whole new level of hypeness, because back in the day,
pass Jimmer? Are they going to pass the Jimmer hype?
It will equal Jimmer hype if we go 4-0.
Maybe so.
It will be buckle up. We will be annoying every national sports writer and media. Every call-in show is going to be bombarded by these nerds in Provo just talking about Taysom for Heisman and that we should be, you know, we're going to be in the playoffs. And
you know what will happen, though?
It's set up to be a crazy
thing. I know, but everyone will start talking about, like, how UCLA is not that good. Like, that's, you know, just, like, preparing you in that insane scenario.
Michigan, too, because as a BYU fan, for multiple reasons, I'm totally cheering for Michigan beating Utah makes this season even better. If Michigan beats Utah to open the year, then at Utah, then like that game is hyped.
Where, you mean the highest rated event to ever happen in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, that's the biggest bunch of BS ever.
By the way, there was an Olympics, Winter Olympics opening ceremony there.
They've played Oregon at home on ESPN, which had more viewers.
There was that top 10 clash between them and TCU not long ago.
This game,
beyond that, some NBA Finals games have happened
games
in Salt Lake
Fox
City.
Sports One. Yeah. No one's tuning in to that.
Anyway. You don't read a lot in the newspapers. Like, opening week, check out that Utah-Michigan game.
Except Popular Mechanics. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, but there's people that, you know, obviously the interest in Harbaugh is pretty high.
Yeah.
Hey, I have one other kind of quick question for you. Do you think that there will be... this is the best way to ask this, has Taysom already had his iconic moment with the jumping over the defender at Texas?
Yes. Yeah. That,
he's not going to surpass that this year.
He'll have some great moments, but I think that as he's inducted into the BYU Hall of Fame, that's the video they're going to have playing before they announce him, is that.
Last thing, 25 years ago. Whoa. All right. This is good. All right. This is good. This will work. 25 years ago, a young man, you invoked his name, stepped out onto the field, wore number 14. He was slight in stature. He was little. He was from Texas. His name was Ty Detmer. They were preparing at this time to start the season at UTEP. That young man would beat the Miners, then go on to play the Miami Hurricanes at home, the number one Miami, and beat them, and eventually win a Heisman Trophy and then separate both shoulders. 25 years ago, the Heisman Trophy season, maybe history could be repeated. It's not gonna, but maybe it could.
Amen, Keith.
So
this is the year.
What we'll do this season is I want to do, we'll do a quick report about how Ty Detmer performed 25 years ago.
Sounds good. Especially if we go 0-4 to start. We'll need something to liven
we'll need something to liven it up. All right, so there it is. 7-6. Tosh has him at?
I have us at going 10-3.
10-3. Unbelievable results. Thank you for listening. CougarCast, we'll be back next week with our preview as the Cougars travel to Lincoln to take on the Cornhuskers of Nebraska. Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games, and go Cougars!